The following Dharma talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonnebaker at Zen Mountain Monastery. Gokhan Osho is a Dharma holder and priest in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. This is from Master Hongzhi, who was a 12th century Chinese master. Fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas. Then all minds are free and all dusts evaporate in the original brilliance shining everywhere. Transforming according to circumstances, meet all beings as your ancestors. Subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. Clear and desireless, the wind in the pines and the moon in the water are content in their elements. Without minds interacting, wind and pines or moon and water do not impede one another. Essentially, you exist inside emptiness and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed. Like spring blossoming, like a mirror reflecting forms. Amid all the noise, spontaneously emerge, transcendent. He says, fully appreciate all dharmas, the emptiness of all dharmas. Then all minds are free and all dusts evaporate in the original brilliance. Fully appreciate all dharmas. Then all minds are free. Whose minds is he talking about? Your mind and my mind? The mind of all dharmas? What does that mean? He says, then all minds are free and all dusts evaporate. These dusts are the six dusts, are the objects of our senses, which are called dusts sometimes in Buddhism because in our attachment to them, to the objects of our senses, we get clouded, confused. Our mind, our original mind is clouded, covered over. When they evaporate, he says, there is the original brilliance shining everywhere. So what are these dusts actually? How is it that they evaporate? Fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas. Maizumi Roshi was Daito Roshi's teacher, so one of our great grandfathers in the Dharma would say, let us appreciate. It was kind of one of his refrains, this very simple line, let us appreciate. I find I return to that, to his teaching, this simple teaching. What is he pointing to? Let us appreciate. I was remembering there are a couple of, early in my practice, a couple of interactions that I remember. One, I was in a group of students meeting with a famous teacher, and some of us had the opportunity to ask a question, and one of my friends asked, when I see something beautiful, how can I see it? How can I see it more fully? How can I appreciate it? And another interaction was with Myotai Sensei, who was one of my early teachers here in Daisan, and I don't remember what the Daisan was about, but I remember at some point she said, for instance, if you would like to appreciate the gray of your robe. And these questions, I was kind of like, what are you talking about? My friend who asked the question about seeing beauty, I was like, what does that have to do with resolving my suffering? I don't understand. How is that a Dharma question? I think I couldn't see how I couldn't see that my vision was clouded, my experience of numbed. And yet I heard these questions. They stayed with me. They have stayed with me. I think that at that time, I somehow also knew in me that I was divided. I was clouded, distracted, not able to see the world around me. And that that was part of my suffering. I knew I was suffering. And this is part of the kind of trap of samsara. It seems that a little bit of distance, a little bit of distraction, a little bit of numbing is protecting, protects. Maybe we do get a little bit of pleasure, comfort. But really, we're distancing ourselves, from our life. And that is suffering. Let us appreciate, Mizumi Roshi says. How do we come closer? Coming closer, we can appreciate. Coming closer, there is a radiance. Coming closer, we come closer to ourselves. Hongzhi again. Fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas. Then all minds are free and all dusts evaporate in the original brilliance shining everywhere. Transforming according to circumstances, meet all beings as your ancestors. Subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. Clear and desireless, the wind in the pines and the moon in the water are content in their elements. Without minds interacting, wind and pines or moon and water do not impede one another. Essentially, you exist inside emptiness and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed, like spring blossoming, like a mirror reflecting forms. Amid all the noise, spontaneously emerge, transcendent. I chose this passage, these practice instructions from Hongzhi, because I wanted to speak about reverence and devotion. Last week when I found out that I would be giving the talk, I was just kind of feeling around in myself. What would I like to explore, to offer, to talk about? And that's what I found. If I'm paying attention, if I'm just practicing well, this is always a live place. Maybe this is where practice is happening. And when I read that passage, it was also, it is spring, and we are celebrating Buddha's birthday. I also had the question, is this kind of speaking to the moment? I sometimes feel a question, is there an avoiding? I hear that from others in practice and turning inwards. I don't think so. I think maybe that's not quite the question. This is exactly what we need more than ever. And we need other things. In the Sangha, we're studying the eight gates of training, Daito Roshi's offering of practice. We can understand the eight gates, each of the eight gates, take them as practices of coming closer, different ways to come closer. Each gate is a practice of cultivating reverence, devotion, learning to appreciate more fully. Hongzhi is giving us practice instruction, guidance, The practice is to appreciate all dharmas, he says, to fully appreciate as they are. What has to happen for us to come closer? What's happening when we come closer? There is letting go. We have to let go of something. Move through something. Loosen what it is that divides, holds us separate. What is that? What needs loosening? Aungshu says, wind and pines or moon and water do not impede one another. How would they impede one another? How do we impede one another in our relationship? They are in relationship, but so close. When I read Hongzhi's practice instructions, there's a whole series of them. Several dozen. Always they include turning inwards. There, he's speaking about Zazen. To turn in deeply, cultivating stillness, cultivating the empty field, he says. To be intimate. And always in each of them, I think there is also at least a line about turning out. Turn inwards and then turn out. In intimacy and not knowing, is there also a kind of turning in and turning out at the same time? When we really come close, what is turning in? What is turning out? When we meet, truly meet a dharma, a thing, we meet ourselves. Of the eight gates, Zazen, in a sense, is the most direct. I think it's helpful to remember that it is one of the eight gates. It is a gate of practice. Certainly a practice of coming close. Can we think of Zazen as a devotional practice? Cultivating reverence in Zazen. In thinking about Zazen and some of the other gates of practice, it's always felt to me like what we learn in Zazen, the coming close, the learning that we can be quiet, the learning that we can concentrate our mind, we can be present with one thing, present with ourselves, that informs the other gates of practice. But we also learn in other areas of practice. I think for some of us, there are kind of natural places of entry. Art practice, body practice, work practice. We also learn to give ourselves over. We learn to enter. And caretaking practice, work practice, this practice of coming close in work, in our human activity of work. Recently, Shoan was introducing caretaking, beginning of a retreat, and she said, very simply, you know, each of us will be given something to take care of. What happens when we're given something to take care of? What happens when we take care of something? It changes our relationship with it. There are so many things that need taking care of. To take care, there is a letting go. There's a giving of ourselves. I feel like we don't say this so much anymore, but there used to be, we used to talk more about leaving no traces. Maybe there's still signs in the bathroom that say leave no traces. I just don't see them anymore. Kind of an emphasis on leaving something finished so that you're leaving it, letting it go, and leaving it complete in a sense. Why? What does it do? What does it create when you do that? I was thinking about the ushers straightening the zendo. So there are a couple of residents who are assigned as ushers, and they both hand out the books. But then when we all leave the zendo, their instruction, their service is to straighten the zendo. And you know, when we leave the zendo, usually we're all pretty good about straightening our own seat, putting the cushion back in the middle. You could turn around and look at the zendo and say, yeah, it's good, it's straight. But the usher's instructions are to come back and to straighten each cushion, to smooth each zabaton, plump up each zafu, put it back in the middle of the zabaton. When I learned to be usher, I was told to, if there was an obvious seam on the zabaton, to put the seam towards the back. If there was a label or a name tag, to put the label towards the back. If the zabatons have a label or a stain, to turn it over. And the ushers straighten all the seats in the zendo, and then they go and check the Buddha hall, straighten the Buddha hall. Sometimes they know the Buddha hall hasn't been used since the last time they were in there. Why? What happens? Do we take care of things for others? For the next person to come along and see, appreciate, feel that? You do feel something when the zendo is well taken care of, or anything is well taken care of. Do we do it for ourselves, that the ushers have this practice opportunity, an opportunity to come close, sense to study a dharma, to study these dharmas, appreciate them? Do we take care for the things that we're taking care of so that they can flourish in their own way? What happens in caretaking when we hold ourselves back? Some of the things that I, just walking around, will notice, I will see something and I'll say, oh, that's someone else's job. Someone else will take care of that. Or I don't have time, I'm kind of in a hurry. Or I'll get it next time I walk by, pick it up. What happens when we don't walk by? When we pick up a piece of trash and carry it to the trash can, next time we get to a trash can, straighten the umbrella that someone left to dry. Hongzhi's friend Dawi would say, all of these are first-class times to make efforts to arouse and alert yourself and awaken. Awaken. Opportunities to come out of ourselves, to come close. Liturgy is a gate of practice, which is maybe, it maybe is most obvious that we are cultivating reverence, devotion, a place where we actually talk about that. When I introduce this much of introduction and liturgy and beginning instruction, and people who are new here, I talk about reverence. When we bow, we're expressing reverence, cultivating that virtue. But how is it that liturgy is a practice of coming closer, of appreciating? Always, kind of in every practice, that is the practice. Right? So when we're chanting, it is a meditation practice to just chant, to be wholehearted, to be complete. That is the instruction for officiants. Simply don't be doing anything else. The first time I heard that, Shugen was talking to a group of us, and I may have been the only senior there, so the only person who was actually officiating. And I remember he was talking about liturgy, and he said this, and then he just kind of paused and looked at me. Then he went back to talking. What are we cultivating reverence for, liturgy, when we're bowing to the altar? You could say we put a Buddha on the altar so that we can bow to the Buddha. Bow to awakened nature. And for me, liturgy is always, whether I'm doing it by myself or doing it in Sangha, it's always sort of a simple way, just remembering that I'm not alone. Liturgy, we can offer the world to the world. We can affirm the wholeness of things. I wanted to say a little bit about Buddha's birthday. You know, when we come to Buddha's birthday, I will always, this is, I think, the only sort of holiday that we celebrate, sort of Buddhist holiday that we celebrate. You know, everything else, we just do zazen or we do sesshin, right? That's like how we celebrate, which is great, right? I don't know, this one feels different. So just a little bit, I just looked some stuff up. There are some stories about the Buddha's birth. And so one of them is that when he was born sort of as a child, fully like grown, and that he took seven steps on lotus blossoms that appeared for him to step on. And he pointed to heaven and earth. So the baby Buddha that we bathe, that's why he is in that pose. Those figures were made by Kaijin, who was a monastic here for many years. For some years, I don't know how long it was, sort of in her, you know, monks don't really retire, but sort of in her retirement, there was sort of less and less that she could do that felt productive. And that was a struggle for her. And for a while, what she found is that she really enjoyed making these ceramic figures. And I think she made a lot of Jizos. And there are a few of them around here and there. You see them still. She died quite a while ago now. But so the Buddha is said in some stories to have pointed to heaven and earth, pointed up and down, and say, between heaven and earth, I alone am the honored one. Another story says that there were, when the Buddha was born, there were fountains of water that kind of rained down from the heavens. One was warm and one was cool to bathe the baby Buddha and his mother, who had just given birth to him, Queen Maya. I looked at just what a couple of contemporary Asian teachers say about this ceremony. One said that bathing the Buddha is an opportunity. It's that we're purifying our own body, speech, and thought. This teacher says in doing that we might experience reverence or joy. Another teacher said the ritual of bathing the Buddha has a humanistic meaning. It not only expresses the reverence of Buddhists for the Buddha on the occasion of his birthday, but also gives everyone a chance to introspect themselves so that they may reduce bad seeds, increase good seeds, open their minds, raise the seeds of enlightenment, make life more meaningful, and bring happiness to all sentient beings in this universe. So maybe that's what we were doing this morning. In art practice, the gate of art practice, which for me has not been a natural place of entry, but I feel like what I have learned in art practice is kind of exactly this appreciating that it's when I take time to do art practice and just sit with one thing, as we're doing this ongo for our assignment, sit in the woods somewhere or walk in the woods and just listen and just look and kind of allow myself to be open and wondering. That when I can allow that, then something sometimes happens. If I stay long enough, this ongo I'm writing, so it's like sometimes like, well, if I just keep writing long enough and listening and looking and holding myself open, then sometimes something opens. Sometimes something comes out in my writing. Sometimes the expression helps, it seems. Helps me to come closer. Sometimes something comes out and sometimes not much. I saw this in one of Hojin Sensei's retreat descriptions recently. She said, our path into expression will be informed by the silence and stillness of Zazen to help loosen the woven web of knowing that constricts our heart and mind and that often pressures us to yield to a certain result. All of these practices, we could say, are ways to loosen our woven web of knowing, this woven web which constricts our heart and mind and pressures us to yield to a certain result. How do we loosen this woven web of knowing? Master Dogen said, when you reflect on your life activities, are they intimate with Zazen or remote from it? When you reflect on your life activities, are they intimate? How do you know if they are intimate or not? This isn't a question that's like a value judgment. It could be hard for a lot of us to avoid that. But it is a place of study of, is this skillful? Am I coming closer? Is this intimate or not? Or is it unskillful? Am I moving further away? Am I holding myself apart? The skillful or unskillful, I think, can be a really helpful kind of guiding question. Awareness. If it is coming closer, how is that? If it is not closer, how is that? Can we feel that when it is dividing and distancing? How does that feel, body and mind? To pay attention to that. Can we tell the difference? Because then we can choose, then we can move closer, move into our lives. Hongzhur says, essentially you exist inside emptiness and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed. Like spring blossoming, like a mirror reflecting forms. Amid all the noise, spontaneously emerge, transcendent. We do have the capacity to respond without being annoyed, without resistance, without any discord. And we get annoyed. I appreciated what Dio said yesterday. Just like, sometimes it's just grumpy. I felt like this line kind of brings us back. This is not just pretty poetry. Right? Yeah, we get annoyed. For me, I feel like these days, a lot of the time, it's just a little bit. It's just a little bit of like, a little bit of tightening, a little bit of like, I do have an opinion. I do feel a little resistance. But we do have the capacity to respond without being annoyed. And he says that we can do this amid all the noise, amidst all the noise. There is a lot of noise. But what is the noise? I think it's kind of the same question as at the beginning. What are these dusts? An emerging transcendent? Again, not to be kind of intimidated by the language. That is no other place than no other person than yourself. I read this recently from Shishin Roshi, who was one of Daito Roshi's Dharma brothers. He says, because we have not developed confidence and trust in ourselves, we continue to look for a flash of insight or sign outside of ourselves, rather than shedding the skin of our old habit-ridden selves and entering the unknown. In this unknown realm, we cannot rely on any of our old tricks for maintaining separation, which is the actual cause of our confusion. And I just thought it was helpful in the way he says that it's because we've not developed confidence and trust. We are developing, can be, should be, in coming closer, developing confidence and trust in ourselves, seeing it is not outside, is not anywhere else. We don't need to look, wait for something from the outside. Come close. Look here. Enter here. Learn to trust. So I'll end with Hongzhi one more time. Fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas. Then all minds are free and all dusts evaporate in the original brilliance shining everywhere. Transforming according to circumstances, meet all beings as your ancestors. Subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. Clear and desireless, the wind in the pines and the moon in the water are content in their elements. Without minds interacting, wind and pines or moon and water do not impede one another. Essentially, you exist inside emptiness and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed. Like spring blossoming, like a mirror reflecting forms. Amid all the noise, spontaneously emerge, transcendent.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.